Well, I'll kick off the talk then. I wanted to talk about volunteering tonight, mostly because I've come to see that volunteering for me is a form of spiritual practice. And depending upon where I am in my life, it can be one of the most difficult I undertake. I also wanted to explore how engaging with a part of the Dharma that seems difficult or at least uninteresting can be illuminating. So in that sense, this talk is really two smaller talks that have been taped together because it seems like no matter how much I think I have to say about the Dharma, it never seems to add up to more than about 15 minutes. In terms of allowing myself to be challenged by the Dharma, it's to the point now that I use my resistance or disinterest to actually guide my investigation of the Dharma in a way. For example, when I first encountered our Bodhisattva statues in the Zendo, I was immediately drawn to Manjushri, the embodiment of wisdom. And I was disinterested in, even a little bit put off by Kanzan, the representation of compassion. Partly it was because, like a lot of people, I had conflated compassion with niceness. And partly it was just because I was really resistant to what felt like a commandment to be a big raw nerve for the whole wide world to grate on. I'm afraid of being overwhelmed by it all sometimes. And still am at times. And yet, I can also say, after years of working with that resistance, that Kanzan is by far the most important bodhisattva to me now. Similarly, when I encountered the precept, do not praise self and blame others, I thought, there's one I don't have to worry about, right? There's a free square. And it wasn't until someone pointed out to me that even if you reverse it to do not blame self or praise others, it's still the precept. And in that reversed form, I worked with that precept for many years and found that very fruitful. And I still work with it, even though I've now given up blaming self. I occasionally fall into the temptation to blame others. So now I practice with it in its original form. It's still with me. So take the six paramitas, the six perfections: Sila, Samadhi, and Prajna. Morality, concentration, and wisdom are just a simplification of the Noble Eightfold Path itself. One so elegant, I actually prefer it to the original, so I have no problem there. Kshanti, patience, sure, no problem. Life will teach you patience. But dana and virya, generosity and joyful effort, have a kind of an allergic reaction for me. There's a pulling back and a tensing up. So the neon sign says, investigate here. The first thing I notice is that dana and virya are kind of welded together in my mind as one thing. To me, virya means generosity of effort, or maybe of energy. And it seemed unlikely that this list had two duplicates in it, so I looked into it, and this word virya, the vir in it, is the same vir in virtue and virility. It's an old root word that referred to a kind of a masculine power to overcome. So if you scrub the gender bias nonsense off of that in 2023, you're left with a word that's more like heroism. And it turns out that's not quite the source of my resistance. Not like I think I've got heroism all sorted out, but it was more that generosity of time and effort that was my frustration and my resistance to dana. So that's what I'm going to focus on tonight. But before I get into that longer section of the talk, I thought I would break us out into small groups for about 10 minutes. And this is a simple one. There's no need to keep records. I'm not asking you to report back. Just have a chat with your Sangha friends. And see if you can strike sparks out of each other. Are there Dharma topics you resist or are potentially actively uninterested in? If so, what's your sense for that resistance? Or are there Dharma topics whose resistance has guided you into healthier practice? Do you investigate or work with your resistances in this way? And if so, what does that look like for you? Just throw that back and forth for 10 minutes. And I'm doing my own breakout rooms, so. Hopefully that was fruitful or at least interesting. So moving on, following on the topic for me to working with generosity. There was a great point made in this year's class on the eighth precept, which is do not be mean with dharma or wealth, share understanding, give freely of self. And it was that generosity becomes difficult when we're giving away something we might need. It becomes even more so when we're talking about something we already don't have enough of ourselves. I never feel like I have enough time. Specifically, I never feel like I have enough time for myself. I've bumbled my way into a fairly busy life, but I'm also an introvert and I have a tendency to feel overwhelmed, so it adds up to that sense of never enough time, never enough time to recuperate. And that's just my stuff to deal with, my particular karma. More generally speaking, I don't know how people with families do it at all. I know friends with kids and families who are fully booked for months in advance. You want to see them, and they're talking about quarters out. I have another friend who's been so conditioned by the hustle economy that he actually feels guilty on those occasions when he's not working. Now, living with time bankruptcy seems to be pretty commonplace in a modern lay sangha, which is why I decided to open the subject tonight. Maybe my notes will be helpful. Maybe you'll point out something for me. Generosity of time and energy brings me right back to that grumpy, stuck place, and it does it pretty quickly. Why can't I seem to get any of my own time? Whose life is this anyway? There's a section in Kosho Uchiyama's How to Cook Your Life that does a great job of showing me how it could be, which is after being asked what he did for fun, he said, "First of all, we have a 5-day session each month at Antaiji. There is no talking allowed during this period, and your legs only hurt more with each day. When it is over, the only relief is the knowledge that you have been able to somehow get through another one." Then, in the middle of each month, I usually leave the temple for a few days for another session somewhere. At the session outside Antaiji, we only sit about 7 or 8 hours a day.
Oh my
But I
goodness.
still have to give Dharma lectures twice a day. And in addition to that, during any rest time, I receive guests who would not normally be able to visit Antaiji. When I am not involved in one session or another, I try to catch up on correspondence that comes into the temple or else receive guests. On top of all this, I spend as much time as I can with my disciples, plus do some reading and work with various manuscripts. So somehow the word fun is not exactly the way I would describe my activities. And he goes on to relate that about the only thing he does for fun is a little light reading before bed, accompanied by a little whiskey taken in hopes of warming up his feet. Antaiji now is climate controlled than any other old Japanese temple building. And the story stuck with me because I was impressed by just how little time he had to himself. I'd be almost furious in that situation. Right? This could only be the activity of someone with almost no sense of possessiveness towards time. English has all these idioms about time that liken it to currency. Spend time, take time, save time, waste time. You look a little closer and it's ludicrous. You can only waste time relative to your own motives. You can't really save time except in that same way. You can't avoid spending time in any case. If you can't avoid spending it, how can you think it's yours? Whose life is this anyway? And yet, I resist that natural giving quality of time. Fortunately, I already have a practice that lets me work with that resistance. I volunteer at Brightway. Unsurprisingly for someone with this difficulty, I don't volunteer anywhere else, and I sort of fell into what volunteering I do, or maybe was gently drawn just by being around a lot when needs arose. Volunteering has interesting qualities. Different ones have come forth at different times in my practice. In the beginning, and somebody else does this now, but when we found out there was lead in the tap water at the Zendo, I was asked to bring water for the tea. We'd go through one of our dispenser jugs every day, and we only had so many of them cached at the Zendo, so I could never stay away for long. Empties had to be refilled and brought back, so if I withheld my time and skipped out on my fledgling meditation practice too much, somebody had to go running across the street to the grocery store to buy water. And as Domio points out, sometimes one of the virtues of volunteering is just that it commits you to come. I also found an aspect where I was almost buying a ticket to be there. For various reasons, it's hard for me to join up and come inside and reach out for connection. Back in the day, before we had rotations for everything, opening and closing the Zendo got done in this ad hoc way by whoever was around. And I used to show up and help take care of that. Like, see, I help make things happen. It's totally legit for me to be here. The de facto, the fait accompli. More importantly, that's how I got to know people. And it was a way to sort of passively and timidly offer this tiny little bit of myself and very carefully watch how it was going to be received. And it was an important Dharma lesson for me that community only exists, turns out, as the giving of community itself, right? Isolation is such a feature of our society. Just the knowledge that you can just do it the other way was a treasure for me. And I'd say, in general, we can most clearly know the natural abundance of life experientially by enacting it. In his book, The World Could Be Otherwise, Norman Fisher wrote, "The perfection of generosity confronts and softens our basic attitudes. To practice it is to appreciate the natural abundance of being, the inherent generosity of time and space, and the ongoing unfolding of life. These are exquisite gifts. Life itself is generous. Life is always making more life. Life is abundant and expansive, never stingy or small-minded. It keeps on going, bubbling up and expanding wherever it has a chance. You don't need to create life. You just have to let it in." There is a little catch-22 there, though, or maybe it's just for me. It seems like maybe we don't give of ourselves because we don't know that natural abundance, and we don't know that natural abundance because we don't give of ourselves. Maybe I should have used the singular first person there. So how do I begin, if not with a leap, right? Or rather with a letting go? Luckily for me, this renunciation can be something human scale and practical, like giving my time away. I can't say how many times I've left work exhausted, wishing I could just go home like a normal person and watch some TV, only to go to the Zendo instead, wearing my volunteering like a wedding ring, dragging myself up the front steps, thinking tonight's probably going to be a rough one, but I guess we'll see. Only to find that that little bit of space inside of "I guess we'll see" is enough to let the whole thing turn around. There's a simple practice of willingness to that. Giving yourself over fully to ringing the bells, because the bulls will happily rat you out if you don't. Giving yourself over fully to preparing water for tea or setting up the heaters. At home, giving up whatever you were doing or going to do and log in and host, fussing over technical details, greeting newcomers, It wasn't a coincidence that I scheduled my talk and my Clouds Endo volunteering on the same night. Sitting down for Zazen and giving yourself fully to the sound of a motorcycle rumbling up the street outside. Knowing from experience that there's a way that just gets on with it. And I have to return to that personally again and again. If I don't, I contract and fortify. Or worse, I get lost in the fog of war, of lay life. In that sense, I'm a slow learner. While volunteering my time is a good way to practice with this, it was never really about time. Time was just a good way in, right? Time is life. But in another sense, even Zazen is nothing but the ultimate act of volunteering. You sit down and give your time, your life to whatever comes forth without grasping anything, rejecting anything, or ignoring anything. You forfeit whatever thing you might have done otherwise with that time and whatever fleeting satisfaction you might have had in that thing. You give it all up, you give it all away, and know from experience that there's something that isn't diminished in the least. And then you really start to wonder, whose life is this anyway? Now, volunteering as the practice of generosity is like any practice tool. The safe ways to hold it are outnumbered by the unsafe ways to hold it. The ego loves to enshrine its little self-improvement projects, but Zen doesn't allow us anything holy. I keep wanting to draw the analogy to stretching, right? Even if you start stretching to prevent injuries, it is still possible to injure yourself by stretching. Don't ask me how I know
Yeah.
So it's not like the takeaway is never say no. Never saying no is no better than always saying no. Never putting yourself first is just as fishy as always putting yourself first. So how much is enough? How much is too much? This is the edge of my practice right now, because I'm on half a dozen of our volunteer rotations, and it feels like too much. But then it always does with me. So I'll finish my part of this with a quote I liked from Eshin Rosetto's Deep Hope. The inherent human capacity of giving and receiving turns us toward what can be described as magnanimous mind, spacious and full, containing everything. In the Buddhist teaching, magnanimous mind is sometimes compared to a mountain, huge, standing firm, bearing witness to everything, seasons, clouds, storms, wind. It is also compared to the ocean, vast, open, expansive, and inclusive of everything. It includes all that we want and all that we don't want, and for this reason, it is also called courageous mind. We can also practice giving to ourselves with an open, magnanimous mind. Putting ourselves first is sometimes the generous thing to do, but without magnanimous mind, it's self-indulgence. That's my rather limited thoughts on the subject and the few things that I found that were worth quoting. So I'll open it up for discussion from here. Do you find it difficult to be generous with time or with other resources? Jinryu?
Yeah, I was just going to ask a very quick question on the talk itself before I actually thought about your what you just asked and what we talked about in the breakout session. And it was a wonderful talk, and I really enjoyed our breakout session. I went into it wondering, but I really enjoyed it. But my question is, what does it mean to wear your volunteering like a wedding ring?
A commitment. Yeah, a commitment that exists even when you're not into it. A reminder of it. Perhaps not the kindest rendering of the symbolism of a wedding ring from The Bachelor in the Sangha, but.
Okie doke.
So, just talking about the expansiveness of things. So, when I lived in New York, I didn't have a car for 10 years. So, on the rare occasions when I had access to a car, I had no idea where to go. Like, I was like, I guess I could drive somewhere, but I don't even know where I'd go. And I feel the same way with time. I too, before I had my kids, I was like, I need a lot of time to myself. I'm really worried about how I'm gonna have any time to myself now. And I found that you just start to appreciate the time you do have to yourself more. Like, it wasn't so much about I don't have enough time or I want more time or anything. It was more just about like, okay, this is a season of my life when I don't have this time, but it's going to something probably more important than me having a lot of alone time. And so I'll just appreciate what I have. So my point is just that I feel like time is, it can expand in all kinds of ways, you know? Yeah, and it can take any shape that you want it to. And like you said, it is a limited resource, but it's still, you're still able to mold it and shape it the way you want.
Thank you. Yeah. I definitely feel like there is way more time when I don't worry about time, incongruously enough. And also, if I go the opposite way, like if I suddenly find myself with a free evening because plans fell apart or people canceled or life just turned out that way, I kind of don't know what to do with myself. And I feel like I have to do something great with it because it's free time. You never have free time. And then, it's like you want to have your cake and eat it too. We used to have this joke in college. Moody DJ was when you're just impatiently taking CDs out of the player and putting other ones in. You won't even finish a song. I don't know what I want to hear, but it isn't this. Moody DJ all night long. I can get that way with time on a free night. I don't know what to do. It's ridiculous. Jinryu?
When I go looking for the reactions button, it's just faster for me to raise my hand. I have really enjoyed this, and I went into that breakout session really not fully understanding what the question was. And when I don't know why this is making me emotional, but when I listened to what other people had to say, I didn't understand what I was resistant to, and then listening to others, I found it out exactly what I was resistant to and was able to talk about it a little bit. So that was a very special thing for me and very moving that would not have happened had I not been here listening to your talk. I think Erica is absolutely right on. I appreciate what she had to say, and I appreciate it. I don't know if you intended it the way I heard it, Mark, but the constant question of whose life is it anyway? I remember when I was working asking myself that question, and it became more and more frequent as I got closer and closer to the point where I couldn't go any further. And then finally, I was able to answer it vehemently. And that's when other things just opened up. I don't work anymore. And yet I am amazingly busy. And I do a lot of things for Brightway Zen, but I also have a volunteer commitment. I'm very busy in another community. And when people would ask, let's go have coffee, let's go have lunch, or whatever, I would never be able to do anything this week. I can't even look at this week is done. Let's go to next week or the week after would be fine. And that is the way it is. And I, you know, when questioned about that, oh, you're so busy. Oh, you're too busy. Oh, you're doing this too much, aren't you? I would feel defensive. And I finally, very recently, got to the point where this is the way my life is. So what? I'm fine. I'm happy. Do you want to have lunch 2 weeks from now or not? you know, I am very fortunate that I now can do the things I truly want to do, even though I can get overwhelmed pretty easily. I'm still doing the things I truly want to do. And that includes having lunch with friends. You know, when I was in business for a couple of deeply personal reasons, I did not have close friends among my colleagues. And it was like that for years. And so one of the things that I truly wanted out of retirement was friends that were closer to me that I, you know, that I could not have had while I was working. And so whenever I find myself getting anxious about, oh, I can't go do this, I can't, you know, whatever, I relax and remember this is what I retired for, was to have more time for other people. And I find that very helpful. That's all.
Thanks for this talk, Mark. It's good. And to me, the opposite of abundance is fear, scarcity. And I think we live in a society that has checklists and for us. I appreciated Norman Fisher's quote and your ending quote. But when I think, whose life is this anyway? It's whose question is this anyway? And I like the do not spend your days and nights in vain. Well, it's up to each person, I think, to define that. Nothing is kept from us. We are given what we need. So, but I'm glad you shared the monk's day. I became tired just listening to how busy he was. And it was always kind of a pressure where, especially when you worked, people said, have a good weekend. And you think, OMG, what am I doing this weekend? Am I doing enough? Is it fun? So thanks for this talk. Like I said, I hang with the word abundance because we have it when we slow down to embrace it. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I notice that word abundance is a great signpost for me. Like, when do I really feel abundance? When do I really feel like there's enough? And why don't I live in that mentality all the time? One of the great corrections for me is to just get out someplace peaceful and green and walk around in that until my sense of abundance just resets. And I'm starting to think now that sense of abundance is a natural state, and the sense of being impoverished is a kind of clench I have to learn to give up.
So, yeah, I'm pretty busy too, but I also I feel like I waste a lot of money. I mean, I waste a lot of time too. And I always feel like I have to be busy doing something. So if I'm watching a show, I have to be reading, I have to be scrolling through something. And this sense of restlessness is sometimes really, really annoying. I have an 18-month-old grandbaby, and when I visit my daughter's, I stay. She lives in Salem. And the biggest joy for me is to be able to put that baby to sleep. And sometimes it takes forever. And I just wallow in that time, that I have with him, and I sing to him, and I talk to him, and I hold him in my arms, and I smell him. It's making me very emotional because I'm never going to have that time back, ever. You know, when I think about how fast they grow, and the just the absolute joy and the, what's the word that I'm looking for? The ability, the privilege to be able to have that time with him and just enjoy it and not look at my phone, not look at anybody, not look at, just hold him. And it sometimes it's 2, 2.5 hours. And I don't know. It's just beautiful. And I think time is what we make of it and what we're able to see in that moment and hold on to.
Thank you.
I want to thank you, Mark, for talking about this. I think it's a great topic, and you know, I'm retired, and one of the things I cherish the most is my mornings. It can take me 2 hours. I mean, I'll get up early just so I have 2 hours to fuddly-duds around in the morning before I'm ready to go do something. But also, I've realized, you know, like, reading the Enneagram, and like, I'm a 9, and I can get stuck and avoid things by wasting my time, you know. It's another aspect that I've just become aware of. So sometimes, you know, I'm fuddly-dutzing around for 2 hours because I'm avoiding doing something or facing something, which is, you know, also an aspect that I struggle with, like facing things because I want to avoid things. So, but this whole thing about time is just really, it just touches every aspect of our life. It's really pretty interesting. So thank you.
Thank you. I'm also a 9. So a lot of that is like looking in a mirror. The wasting of time on procrastination as an unsuccessful stress management technique is a lifelong thing for me. And I don't have, I wish I had like a good answer or could cure for it, because on one hand, it's clearly part of my process to need to step back. On the other hand, like, it's so ineffective. I've learned to respect inertia. Cultivate it carefully, maintain it. knowing how frustrating it is to rebuild it. I hugely look forward to retiring and getting the big block of my time that I sell back. And I have this worry, which is like, one of the hardest times for me in any given year is actually coming back from vacation. So I go on vacation, my stress level goes to zero, my inertia collapses, I am a happy animal just doing whatever sounds like a good idea. And then I get back into the world with all of its demands and all of these things that need to get done. And that little tick of stress from 0 to like 1/100 of a percent is like an infinite increase, right? When the baseline is small, even a little bit is a big increase. And I get so frustrated when I have to re-engage. I have this worry that when I retire, I will basically just step back from the world and not come back. So I kind of feel like I have to have this cracked by then. That's the other way. That just, you know, taking care of everything that needs to be taken care of can be a precious thing, because it brings me back to practicing with this difficulty again and again and again. You'll never hear me say very many nice things about professional life, but it is useful in that respect. Well, the gang seems to be kind of winding down. Thank you for helping me pad a 15-minute talk out to 50. Your wonderful observations and contributions. Shall we say last call for comments? All right.
I just want to say I'm so sorry I missed it. I bowed out to organize my talk, which is next. And I feel like at least I'm organized now. And I come back and it's over. Oh, well, I'll listen to it online. Thank you, Bob.
Mark, you just gave us 10 more minutes this evening. Thank you.
Denny had her hand up.
Yeah, Denny. Oh, you're on mute again, though.
Do we have time? Because I don't want to hold everybody over.
I've got time.
This topic is huge for me. It's so huge that I just almost can't articulate what I want to say. First of all, I relate with your being an introvert who has to work hard to get out there and open yourself up. But I have been volunteering my whole life long. I mean, since I was 16 years old, I don't think there's ever been a time when I haven't volunteered. And I think I have done that because even though it's hard for me every single time to get out there, it fills me up so much. It just, I just open up and I just feel all this love for everything and expansion. And then I go home and I'm exhausted. And then I just keep going through the same routine over and over again. And I too thought that when I retired, it was going to be this, at last Shangri-La kind of thing. I'm going to do all these things I love to do. But I had a real tough 2 years. And part of that was because of the pandemic, I think. Well, that had a huge part, played a huge part in it. But I learned a lot about myself after retirement. And one of those things was that I really always appreciated structure and collaboration with other people and almost immediate feedback and exchange with other people. And I guess I found myself creating my own routine, and I do have a very tight routine, but it's most of it is caregiving. And what I really want to do, and this, I'm going to end with a question because I'm really trying to come to terms with this. I really want to find some spare time to pick up my guitar and start making music again and writing music again. I saw this from somebody and I'm just longing for it, but I never find the time to do it. And other people keep asking me to do it, but I just can't, I don't know why. I just can't do it and it's driving me crazy. So maybe I'm very new here, but maybe a year or two down the road when I give a talk, I'll throw that out there and you could all tell me what's wrong with me. That's all.
Wow. Wonderful. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the talk. It was great.
Thanks. All right, well, let's do our dedication. We offer the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to attain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Vajna Paramita.